Welcome to Shanghai John, a raw and lively regular debate about China tech, advertising, creativity, platforms, and the intersection of it all. Join us each session for timely and relevant discussions on all things China marketing. We'll also be joined by an entire spectrum of China experts. And if you want to learn more about Shanghai John, visit our website, johnstation.com. I'm Bryce Witwam.
And I'm Ali Kazmi.
This is a special episode that we're broadcasting today. It's a quick one-on-one, you and me, recap of our very successful China at the Crossroads podcast, which is our live stream that's available on LinkedIn to watch again. I will put the show's link in the show notes of this particular podcast so you can watch it. But we just thought we'd take some time today and talk about some of those considerations. What stood out for us? What were the major things that kind of surprised us and or maybe potentially that we didn't necessarily agree with? The 10 considerations were for the 2024 China trends, which were created by Totem Media. We had Chris Baker and Minnie Wong from Campaign Asia on the show, and we went through those. It's the ninth year of the report, and Chris comprehensively went through five of the 10 considerations on the show. So again, what stood out for you? What was the major thing that kind of surprised you or that you think that we should highlight for our listeners?
Yeah, I don't know if there are too many surprises. I think it's a lot more expected. Maybe that's because we're just so close to what's happening in China, and you know, we're just at the pulse of marketing as well over there. And you know, there's still a lot of people that give us feedback on what's happening. And yeah, I would be curious to see how advertisers react. And the decisions they make and how, you know, whether or not they in fact follow through on some of the investment scenarios that were recommended or that have been recommended in the report. So the thing that stood out for me a lot was that there would be a lot more investment that's made on last mile, that the choice of metrics for advertisers are going to be different, that, you know, they're going to be looking at trying to accomplish a lot more through social commerce and social platforms at large. So that, for me, was quite interesting. What about you, Bryce?
Yeah, I was particularly blown away by the reconfiguration of media spend, or at least that the 90 marketers that Totem talked to for the report mentioned that they were considering changing their spend on Taobao and Tmall to more on Douyin and Xiaohongshu. This doesn't mean that they're going to abandon Taobao. I also noticed Jingdong never even showed up on the report. Maybe that's indicative of the 90 marketers that they talked to. But okay,
maybe it wasn't included in one of the questions as a platform.
But I thought was interesting was the focus more on those platforms. Mm. And the reason for that is because people are taking more time through social commerce to decide on what they want to buy, as opposed to maybe in the good old days where you'd watch Li Jiaqi, Austin Li, Taobao live stream, and you just buy a bunch of frivolous shit that you probably didn't need. And you susakan, you'd buy it, and then maybe buy five things and return three. But that glory days is kind of gone. And what's interesting to me, that's not an insight, but what's mostly insightful is the fact that Alibaba's kind of lost the plot in the context of social commerce, which they have effectively owned. I mean, you think about it, 2016. Where did live stream come from? It was really from Alibaba's technology, and they'd be able to create this live program that you could get on a 4G phone anywhere in China. Now, that social commerce interaction where people are spending more time to decide what they want to buy is happening on other platforms. And here's the thing, that it's also going to affect the sales. Now, I know that you did a report at WPP that talked about the difference between transactional e-commerce and social e-commerce, right? Remember that?
Yeah.
And And obviously the percentage of transactional e-commerce in terms of volume is far greater mm-hmm. in terms of what people will spend. That means that people will go on Taobao, they'll look for some product that they need, whether it's dishwashing detergent or an article of clothing. They kind of have a good sense of what they want to buy, and they'll just directly go and buy it. They won't actually take influencers' advice. So that's the transactional side. But the social commerce side is where people spend more time. And that seems to be highlighted through the report, is that they're spending more time on these social commerce platforms to be able to decide what they want. And the difference in China to the rest of the world, as you know, is 90% of Chinese will buy on the platform. There's in-platform purchases, as opposed from in the West, and or let's say anywhere outside of China, where it's the complete opposite. Mm. People might go on TikTok, they might watch videos, but then they're going to go on Amazon or Lazada or Shopify to buy the product.
That's correct.
That part was really interesting to me, is how the platforms have switched. And as you know, Campaign Asia had an article about that, which I can also put in the show notes.
Yeah. I guess what, like, just hearing you talk as well, the thing that struck me, or that strikes me as well, is how social commerce has evolved from something that might have lived on Taobao, JD, or WeChat, and has kind of migrated into platforms like TikTok and Xiaohongshu, aka Red. And I guess the difference, you know, like when you think of the genesis of the three platforms, or the three, you know, there's three big types of platforms, I guess. There's one that's an e-commerce first platform, which in this case Taobao and JDR. Then WeChat, which is a messaging platform primarily with a set of other features and functionality. And then TikTok and Red, which are primarily like social and content led in nature. And so, you know, when I think of, and I guess TikTok and Xiaohongshu are probably benefiting from algorithms and understanding consumers and audiences better, and the creation of content that's bite-sized and snackable and shareable, and it's video in nature and it's not images and static and it's not copy-based. So I can totally see how those platforms have kind of, you know, evolved or they've, you know, kind of revolutionized the definition of what social commerce was for Taobao versus what it was for Weixin versus what it is today for TikTok or Douyin. And as a result, you know, if you'll remember, like when we did marketing, or when we do any kind of advertising on Taobao or within the Ali ecosystem, you know, they had that, you know, they always organized their marketing funnel around AIPL, awareness, interest, purchase, and loyalty. And I guess, you know, and Weixin, or rather Tencent, has their own equivalent, and TikTok does too. But I guess, you know, I think we kind of mentioned this as well in the live cast, where that the funnels changed, the consumer demographic has changed, you know, the cues that get someone interested or hooked onto a product have changed. Advertisers are much more competitive when it comes to return policy and being, you know, giving consumers the opportunity to try product before they commit, not commit to pay, but, you know, they can always return a product within 7 days. And the consumer themselves have ordered, you know, they've gone through two generations or two iterations of social commerce, so they're very advanced users. And I can totally therefore see how a content first, powered by all of that smart, you know, those smart kind of profiling algos are resulting in this, you know, this resurgence of social commerce the way we see it. And that's why all of these advertisers are kind of moving their money. They're not moving their money, but they're just, you know, they know there's going to be drip commerce, or there's still going to be a steady stream of income that comes through D2C on Weixin and through traditional, let's say, commerce on Taobao. But the, you know, the bulk of new consumers, new product discovery, that's most likely to come through a TikTok or through a Red, where a lot of that type of, you know, behavior happens. So it's not so much of a surprise, And I would anticipate more of that type of I would expect more advertisers to switch their investments into platforms that offer both discovery, brand discovery, product trial, and then also the ability to offer some kind of service to customer. So customer service as well within those platforms.
I'm particularly fascinated by technology acceptance and how a platform like Red Xiaohongshu is able to really create this amazing attractive social commerce opportunity, especially for women, but because it falls heavily on the beauty industry and is a part, you know, it's very skewed female. Men are coming up on Red, but the way this platform is set up and the way that you have multiple choices of videos and that you can select, it's like no other. And when I did research last year on this, I was fascinated that how many Chinese students told me that they felt that TikTok or Douyin was too obtrusive, it was too in your face, whereas Xiaohongshu gave you the power to be able to select and go through a whole plethora of different influencers to select from that you could watch quickly and then get out quickly.
That's right.
It was like a catalog of lipstick recommendations. So, or I have acne, or I have a certain skin condition, and totally there right. are just like not only there's not just one person talking. There's like 30 or 40 talking, and then you can cherry pick what you want to watch. It's unbelievable. There's no equivalent of that in the West. And
that's right.
And when I tell people about Xiaohongshu, I have to tell them like this. There's no equivalent to this. If I were a platform in the U.S., this is where I would go because this is definitely a future platform. I would predict that at some point in time that Red is, you know, considering a global move at some point because it is such an amazing platform, both in the context of the algorithm that you mentioned, but also the search capabilities and the ability to actually feel like you're in control. As opposed to Douyin, you're kind of out of the control, and you feel that the algorithm is like overpowering you. That's what a lot of people tell me.
That's a really I like that insight. I like what you just said over there. So Douyin kind of sucks you in, and you know you could spend hours of just swiping through content that's been, you know, personalized to your interests, versus a Xiaohongshu. Which you know, through very advanced UX, it empowers you to discover more specific to a category, a product, brand that you're interested in. So you're still equally engaged, but the gravity of that relationship either falls in, you know, in the consumer's hand, or it falls on the platform, and I guess consumers are swinging between. It's kind of a pendulum, and so you're swinging between both platforms.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, as former smokers, TikTok is like TikTok. Which, you start watching or Douyin, you start watching it, and it's like. It's like that first drag of your cigarette and you think, oh, this is so good. And then you get down to the end of the cigarette or when I used to smoke, like the second cigarette I've just lit up because the first one was so awesome. And then I'm into the second one and I'm asking and this is like the equivalent of like going through like my 10th video on TikTok. And I'm thinking, what the fuck am I smoking this for? This is terrible. I get that feeling a lot. And that there's a psychological connection to that. I don't really get that with Xiaohongshu. Yeah. I feel that I'm much more in control of things, and I don't feel like I'm on my second cigarette. I don't know if you can relate to that, Ali, at all.
Yeah, I think it's just the way the platform's been set up, and YouTube Shorts does that as well a little bit. Instagram also has a little bit of that as well. Yeah, and they just keep on getting better, making sure that you spend as much time with the platforms as possible.
Okay, the other one I was going to talk about was private traffic and loyalty. And that's just the one of the comments that I did make on the live cast to Chris, or the question I had.
Which consideration was it related to?
I believe that was number 7, impact and impression versus impressions. Okay. And this was really about, according to the marketing priorities that are in the full report, Totem mentioned that brands are looking, yes, at sales, brand awareness, and brand image, and loyalty as well. And loyalty, according to the report, equals private traffic. And to me, this is another really interesting aspect, because if your sales are diminishing as a result of value and divides and some of the other things that were brought up in terms of the economic challenges, wouldn't a brand invest more in getting repeat customers? Would they spend more money in trying to build loyalty and getting you to buy a second purchase? Because we know it costs 3 times as less to sell to someone a second time versus acquiring a new customer. And China, let's face it, it was addicted to acquisition all the time. Because, yeah, it's a big freaking country, and it was growing, and all we had to do was just distribute the product, and it would sell. Now that's being challenged. As a result, are we going to look at more investments in loyalty, in private traffic? What do you think?
Like, I'd like to say it depends on this one. I think I remember talking to, I guess we can quote him, Maxwell Xu from Unilever, who at the time was running a Clear shampoo. And he said to me, and like it was, and this is when I was a junior director, and it kind of blew my mind when he said this. He's like, Ali, you know, it's a lot cheaper for me to just get a new customer or a new user versus trying to retain an existing one. I guess it's, you know, it had something to do with the relationship that consumers have with shampoo and dandruff and dandruff removing shampoos. And so I guess for a Unilever, where you're looking at a product that's, I don't know, 30 renminbi, which is the equivalent of maybe $5, the price of, you know, 1,000 impressions and getting, a single user exposed to the same ad 5 times or 8 times within a span of, you know, a calendar week, to influence, to raise top of mind so that they walk into, you know, a supermarket or they go into an e-commerce platform, they buy that product, is much greater than trying to retain private traffic. From a CPG perspective, I guess the thinking is that because of choice, because of the commodity, the products that are kind of commoditized, shampoos, toothpastes, it's hard to build a relationship with that consumer. And the amount of money that you would end up investing in rewards, in retention or retention activities and influencers and invitations and events, inviting them to offline things, etc. Like, that cost becomes companies like Coca-Cola, Unilever, P&G's, Mondelez's, they're just going to be better off putting that money into impression driving communications as opposed to the last mile.
At the same time, with AI and customization being far cheaper than it used to be, that I would agree with you in that sense that, yeah, of course it's easier and more cost effective just to get more acquisition. But now the cost of doing that has dramatically decreased. I mean, back when I was starting, when I started at Wonderman, we were back and we actually did direct mails for clients. And obviously those were for high-end clients like automobiles and insurance and high-end services that works for that.
Of course.
But when WeChat came along, it completely revolutionized that, and it was far cheaper. Now, with automation, with AI, it's far easier and cheaper now to be able to to spend, even if it's 30 at Kwai, you can spend the money, create the platform, and it allows you to automatically try to win back a second or get a second purchase.
But don't you think the same argument could be applied to impression driving communications? So like using artificial intelligence and just AIGC tools and understanding, you know, using IDs or consumer identity to identify consumers in platforms, like you could still get away. I think like for cars, totally makes sense. I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right? There is the relationship between consumer and car, buyer and car, owner and car, driver and car, is something that can be retained, and you know, there's all kinds of things that there's ways for you to engage with that consumer over the car's lifetime. But I just think about, you know, the vast majority of products that are, you know, CPG or commodity in nature. And, I just find it very difficult to recommend a loyalty program. And I've done this, by the way. My last job was doing this on Coca-Cola. And I mean, one of the things that we learned, and I don't know if this, I guess I can talk about this on the show. It's been a year since I left that job, but you know, consumers that buy Coca-Cola are really anchored into the Coca-Cola red brand and not into the other portfolio of brands, right? Not as much on Sprite, or not, definitely not as much on Fanta, and a lot less on the coffee brands, the water brands, etc., etc. And to get someone to drink a Coca-Cola beverage, you had to put a lot of money into, you know, the anchor brand was always red. But getting someone to drink, you know, building loyalty around Sprite, Fanta, water, and coffee was much more difficult than to build loyalty around red. And so the strategy we then would recommend to the client was like, how do you get someone that drinks red to drink some of the other products as well? And doing that, I mean, we designed all kinds of communications around that, and that was all WeChat led. And, you know, we would test advertising, we would test promotions, we would run all kinds of mechanics to see. But net-net, your average promotion still came down to a figure, and I'm going to avoid quoting it, I could tell you offline what it is, to a figure that was the equivalent of what you would do anyway on an awareness campaign.
Ooh, it's very Byron Sharp of you to say so. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Huh? Yeah, no, I just don't want to, you know, we know, we... So I just, when I think about the amount of money they spent on doing, you know, getting that segmentation down against that consumer that loved red, that possibly could love green, orange, coffee, and water as well, against different day parts and different locations, the amount of money that got poured into building or creating a relationship beyond that red moment, like, you might as well just run a major like acquisition campaign.
So how do you define loyalty then? I think that's something that our listeners,
loving the brand,
because I think when people say loyalty, when people say loyalty, they think of like a Kia family or Mileage great Plus question. Or something like that. We're talking about a repeat purchase. That's what we're loyalty in your definition. Correct me if I'm wrong. At least on the CPG side, it refers to making a second or possibly third purchase. Correct? Is that what you? How yes. you apply?
And in the world of Coca-Cola, it means, you know, a single purchase within a week, every week of that one product, and that definition, you know, by that definition, that's a very high kind of KPI to set for retail.
I guess my answer to you on that is it possible that given the economic slowdown and the move to modesty and value, that some of that may be more, and basically that for some business is not as good as it used to be. And therefore looking at trying to encourage repeat purchases may be an option to some brands that would no that previously would no longer consider it. In other words, the macroeconomic forces are impacting their decision to rethink private traffic and loyalty and encouraging second purchases. Whereas before, it didn't matter. Just run a campaign, get Coke Red on your brain, that enough where people are standing at the refrigerator at Halde,
yeah,
and they're gonna buy a Coke beverage.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if it's just, yeah, if the Mac the yeah. The systems yeah. change.
We might even want to look at redefining what loyalty means, especially in this economic climate. I think being like there's probably three horizons to loyalty. One is more about brand preference, and it's saying that look, you know, this or brand preference is top of mind. Like, you know, if you ask me a recall question, first brand that comes to mind is always going to be, you know, these are the brands that I prefer. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, Air China, China Eastern, Air China, or actually neither of them. But anyway, for this discussion, Air China, I don't know, Nike, Adidas, right? Mm. So that's just me. That's just at the brand recall level. That's horizon one. The second horizon will be, you know, am I a follower of any of those brands on social media? And then, you know, what platforms do I have a relationship with those brands? So is I, you know, it's like saying, am I a follower of the brand on just e-commerce platform? And, you know, I would translate that into a transactional relationship where I'm just looking for coupons, discounts, and, you know, special offers so I can go and buy. Or is it a relationship that I hold with the brand on a TikTok? Or on Red, where I want to discover new products, or I want to be invited to new events, or I want to know, you know, who they're sponsoring, or you know, I want to have access to limited edition product, or you know, I want to know if there's a, you know, if there's a block party hosted by Adidas Originals, and I want to get first dibs at an invite. I want to know if my influencer, my favorite influencer, is going to be there. So I would look at that as a second level. And then the third is going to be, you know, part of a hardcore CRM program, which is organized, which, you know, which is structured. There's financial benefit to it. There is, you not only love the brand, you buy the product, and then you buy the product with great, like, you know, like with frequency, right? So you're buying it significantly to a point where you, you know, you've got every, I don't know, what's a line of product? Every Originals product that exists. There's different lines, but I think you understand. So I think advertisers need to maybe organize themselves across three horizons, and then the private traffic one component for me is in the middle, is the second horizon. Like remember that Facebook, there was this, yep, Facebook research that was done maybe, I don't know, 15 years ago. And they asked someone, you know, like if you're a follower of a Coca-Cola, for example, and you're faced with a decision to buy a product and you have two choices, they're similarly priced. Which of the two products are you going to buy? If you're a follower of a Coca-Cola on a Facebook, you're more likely to buy a Coca-Cola when you're faced with a decision to buy versus a Pepsi. And so that's what, I guess, for me, private traffic, that's how I would define private traffic. So it doesn't necessarily need to result in commercial gain for an advertiser. It can still result in earned impressions, or it can still,
right,
you know, there's still social currency and things, right, like that.
Any of the other considerations that stood out for you? Like you said, there wasn't a lot of surprises. I think also some of the things that I saw that are similar to other trends in other markets besides the value and was also the emotional things, especially amongst Gen Z, the mood boosting, the hustle and hope, move to modesty. Some of these things, which you find on a lot of global trend reports that we discussed on a previous episode, are also happening in China, that there is this generally this emotional disconnect. And there are a need for brands to kind of connect with that, not just in the Western markets, but also in China, which, you know, a number of researchers have pointed to, you know, post-COVID situations, maybe more pronounced in China because the economic slowdown. Obviously, we had Bessie and Peter on our previous episode, and Bessie mentioned that it's just about not being accustomed to an economic slowdown for the first time in their life, where, you know, if you're from most places in the world, you're used to the roller coaster ride, and they're not. So I thought that kind of stood out for me as being, again, it wasn't necessarily a surprise, but I also thought that was kind of interesting. Is there anything else from your side?
No, not from my side. I would love to see how, like I said, how advertisers react and what they're going to skew their investments towards. One of the things that you said in the show as well was advertisers tend to gravitate towards investments, media investments that they can directly attribute success or commercial success to. And I think there's a trap for advertisers or marketers to invest in last mile media. They forget that, you know, during times of economic uncertainty, that, you know, they should perhaps consider over investing in awareness media, because climates are, you know, the economics is always cyclical. And I mean, I'm not an expert at this, but I think I would challenge advertisers to look at how they can invest ahead of the curve, so that when the economy regains, when it does rebound, then you want some of these brands to be in a position of strength and priority over the ones that have just been spending on discounting themselves. So I don't know. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, no, it's the age-old phrase, you know. In good times, you should advertise. In bad times, you must advertise. And yeah, they're right. There's an inherent contradiction between how people responded to this survey. The marketing priorities. Sales is number one, but then brand image and brand awareness is also. I guess they want to try to do everything. But obviously, if you have a priority, then you've got to choose one or the other. And I would tend to agree with you that this is the time to invest and to spend more money to try to make that happen. Well, it's been really interesting, Ali. Great talking about this.
Always.
We're going to have another recap show specifically for the podcast with Chris Baker from Totem Media, the originator of this presentation or this study, as well as Minnie Wong from Campaign Asia. I will put the links to the Campaign Asia article as well as the live stream podcast in the show notes of this episode. And with that, we'll bid you adieu. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Join us in a few weeks for another exciting show. And to all our listeners, until then, have a great day.